future.
There are no people.
There are no people in the future.
No people at all.
There are no people in the future.
Where did all my people go?
There are no people in the future.
Let me try my people call.
Welcome to Raging Chickens, Out to Coop Live. It is our call-in show from Monday, March 8th, 2021. Yes, it is International Women's Day, and we've got a great show for you today. On Out to Coop Live, we talk to progressives, activists, and troublemakers of all sorts, right from our own backyards and across the country. On Fridays, on what I'm told I have to refer to as our flagship show. I don't know why, but people keep on telling me that, so I'm like, okay. On Friday, Sean Kitchen and I break down the good, the bad, and the ugly in state and national politics. And you can get both by subscribing to our podcast on Podbean, iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. You can only call in, however, to the conversation live through our Podbean app on Mondays at 7 p.m. Eastern. Or you can drop on our YouTube stream, you know, hit that subscribe button, hit that like button for the stream. And you can use the comments within there. You can help support this show by becoming a patron for as little as $5 a month. Go to patreon.com/rcpress. And if you're listening to the show live on the Podbean app, you can show us some love right now. Just drop a few bucks in our tip jar by clicking that little gift icon at the bottom of your screen. Fill your digital pockets with, I kid you not, Podbean's golden beans, they call them, and send us a gift of your choice. Every gift that you send helps support and expand this podcast. You can also help out the show right now heading on over to our YouTube channel. Like I said, smash that subscribe button, like that stream for the show, and hit that notification bell so you know every time that we go live. And if you're done after the show, you just still need your fix of political news, you can tune in to the Rick Smith Show. And he streams live at 9 p.m. Eastern on his YouTube channel, his Twitter, Facebook, any place you can get a stream at, that's where he's at tonight. And all for all the gamers out there, want to introduce you to the go-to place for all your gaming needs. Go to the Game Inn. That's the Game Inn with two N's, located on 309, Route 309 in Quakertown, PA. Game Inn is a Quakertown-based, black family-owned gaming store. Not only are they friends of the show, they're actually the parents and family of my son's best friend, right? So that's kind of why they're right here, right? But they're some fantastic folks. They have everything you could imagine. Retro N64s, Nintendo DSs, PS4s, and Switches. They have a large variety of video games, all platforms, collectibles, action figures, Funko Pops, literally like a wall of Funko Pops like you've never seen. Nicholas, who's kind of one of the owners, is a little bit of an obsessive when it comes to his Funko Pops. And if you got kids, they get a discount with every A on the report card. You can check them out on their Facebook page, on their Twitter at the Game Inn with two N's. You got a question about a game, look for something hard to get, message them on Facebook, drop them an email at thegameinpa@gmail.com. Give them a call at 267-424-2535 or visit their website at the Game Inn with two N's, thegameinn.com. And a special shout out once again to Jonathan Mann, who wrote our intro song, There Are No People in the Future. Check out all his great stuff on his YouTube page and follow him on Twitter at SongADayMan. That's with two N's, at SongADayMan on Twitter. Well, on today's show, I am thrilled to welcome State Representative Elizabeth Fiedler and State Senator Nikhil Saval to the show. Representative Fiedler, she represents District 184 in South Philadelphia and first won that seat against a deep-pocketed Democratic machine in Philly. Let's face it, back in 2018. And let's face it, in significant sections of Philly, the Democratic primary is where all the action is. She ran a strong general election campaign with two other members of PA's own squad, Representative Summer Lee, Representative Sarah Inmorato, who also won huge upset victories against the Democratic machine politicians. And I very much like to think about that election in 2018 as kind of setting out the kind of like breaking the glass on possibility, if you will, right? Basically saying like, hey, wait a minute, maybe we can win. And then in 2020, State Senator Nikhil Saval won his election to represent the first state Senate district in Philadelphia. Senator Saval's district hugs the Delaware River from the Philly airport in the south to the sections of Port Richmond in the north. His election win set a new round of shockwave to the Democratic Party establishment and state politics. Yes, Democratic Party voters will elect an open socialist to office. In a remarkable short period of time, the progressive left is on the rise in PA, and that's made a huge difference in the political discourse, but perhaps even more importantly, in what we might call our political horizons. Suddenly, things seem possible. As I like to say on this show, What was once PA's own progressive squad is now becoming a battalion. I wanted to have Representative Fiedler and Senator Saval on the show this week because it's budget season in Harrisburg, and they are both part of a renewed push for a people's budget, along with the great folks at We the People PA. This time around, however, progressives are exercising their muscles and pushing the political discourse, and not just in the Capitol building, but in the streets with the movements that they have been part of for years. So it's a progressive budget and a progressive left movements on the table tonight. Representative Fiedler, Senator Saval, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having us.
Thanks so much. Thanks for having us.
Oh, you got it. When I was kind of putting notes together and stuff for the show tonight, I came across this article that was from 2018, and it was in the Philadelphia Inquirer. And I remember it was like a visceral shock. It's from the Philadelphia Inquirer, and it has a picture on the front. It's called, like, what's a group says that staying Democratic gains in Philly. This was about Reclaim Philadelphia, right, at center. And it has a picture on the front of Rick Kajewski, right, Lev Hirschhorn, right, Nicholas Pastor, and none other than Representative Fiedler, but before she had won her election. And the first word of that article is, Nikhil Saval is opening up to dozens of people about one thing, right? And I remember it was funny coming across that again, that piece, coming across this again, and kind of seeing, like, the roots, if you will, of kind of where we are today. And the fact that, you know, both of you kind of were connected to, say, Reclaim Philadelphia back, like, you know, back in 2018 and before that, it says a lot about, like, where this movement has come. So I'm just curious, I mean, you can, either one of you can kind of start this off. So, I mean, if you think about that kind of that moment, right, kind of and connected with building power in the streets of Philadelphia to kind of where we are now in the terms of the election, I mean, what's that, just kind of what's that like, kind of in hindsight, in that perspective of kind of growing out of that context?
Elizabeth, I think you should go first.
Sure. I remember the article. I remember the photo really clearly because I don't know if you saw
you got your kid.
Yeah, my 1-year-old is in the bottom right corner, yep. Just like sneaking into the shot. It was in the office in a basement, and I just have such a clear memory of that time. that photo, so much is in that photo. Wait, I'm sorry. The question was, what is it like?
Yeah, I mean, just
now?
Kind of like, I just look at it, you know, seriously. I mean, we said this a little bit before we went live today. It's like, it seems like so much has happened. And I look, but that's 2018, and that's not that long ago. But in some ways, it feels like ages ago, given all that's going on. Mm-hmm. And I look back at that moment, and it's like, this is before, you know, like your breakthrough election. Right. This is when, Rick Kajewski just got elected here. Right. Senator Saval, you were there as an organizer with Reclaim Philadelphia. And at that time, that's before we see, you know, these kind of breakthrough elections. And so I'm just kind of curious, like, thinking back on that, what's that? I don't know. What's that like thinking back on that, I guess?
I think it makes me feel really, like, really heartened, really positive about the group of us who embarked on this before we knew what it was going to be. We didn't know if it was going to be successful. We didn't know a lot of things. We didn't know what was possible, but just the coming together, the solidarity, a good friend of ours, Amanda McElmurray, I remember someone said, hey, we should talk about being fearless. And mm-hmm. she said, you know, I don't want to, I'm going to poorly paraphrase her now, but she said, like, the point is not to be fearless. It's to recognize what you're afraid of and, like, figure out how to confront it. No one's mm-hmm. actually, you know, unafraid. Everyone's afraid of something. Everyone is held back by something. And so I think, like, both, you know, coming together and the solidarity around that, and then just, like, charging forward and seeing what's going to happen and throwing your heart into it and all your muscle and everything that you have and even more. That's what it reminds me of. And I think it's just really a continuation now and a real chance to build on what we have, what we've accomplished so far. Senator, what do you think?
Yeah.
Well, it's funny. In some ways, I almost feel like I have more vivid memories of Elizabeth's campaign than I do of my own, if only because it was, most of it, unlike mine, much of it was in real life, but also it was just so, the sense of newness was enormous. And, you know, for me, Representative Fiedler and I knew each other a little bit beforehand. We both were in journalism. And so when it was the first time, essentially, that someone I knew was running, you know, it was all happening that year. Of course, there were many big kind of national successes or nationally recognized successes, of which Elizabeth's election was one of them. But you know, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez was elected, and the congressional squad. But this was just like, this was happening just very close to home. It was just our neighborhoods, and like door to door, we were watching Elizabeth's I think she decided to run. I'm sorry, I'm speaking about your campaign, but it was so important to me. Like 2 month old, you know, then grow into a 1 year old. I mean, it was incredible. And I think the thing that was also powerful was just that it was so. You know, there was a lot that was being lived or demonstrated in that. Representative Fiedler had a childcare center in her office, mm-hmm. which, if I'm not mistaken, Rep. Fiedler, wasn't that Senator Fumo's old office? Is that right?
Yes, it was, Senator Saval.
Oh, that's beautiful.
Looking back on that is just like, Representative Fiedler's campaign manager, Amanda, who's a friend of both of ours, was my campaign manager, a co-founder of Reclaim. Mm-hmm. I think what I feel looking back on that is just like, I think there was a lot of integrity to Rep. Fiedler's campaign and like all, just like living your values very publicly and just mm-hmm. like, you know, the fact that it was about the struggles. I mean, Fiedler phrased it very nicely that like it was in fact confronting all of our fears and all the things that affected all of us personally, and tying those personal stakes, these things that you were afraid to talk about, because maybe you were ashamed of them. You're ashamed of the fact that you've suffered healthcare debts, that you can't pay your rent, these things that everyone in our communities are going through, that your language ability is keeping you from access to services. That sort of personal thing, that private sense of anguish, became public in Rep. Fiedler's campaign. And I think it was like a model, you know, for many to come. And also that the state was a place to negotiate those things. I think that's the other thing for me personally, it was inspiring to think, oh, it's not just the city or it's not the federal level, it's the state, it's Harrisburg. It's the place where I had thought good people and ideas go to die. Right. I thought I'd work and you, or that's just the reputation. But then it was like, no, this can happen. And this is actually a leverage point. This is a point of real power and we can't ignore it and we have to take it. So, and I think that resonated with people. And I have great nostalgia, honestly, for that.
Well, I have to say is like, you know, that comes across, you know, there's one line in that article, you know, this is Holly Otterbein's article on, and she says it's gritty, emotional, and it speaks almost surprisingly vulnerable, and it's working. And I remember that visceral sense at the time. And, you know, listening back on when Sean Kitchen kind of interviewed you, Representative Fiedler and Representative Lee and Representative Imarato, I was struck again in, you know, that's the same thing that you're just describing there, Senator Saval, about the, you know, about the kind of emotion and the connecting with people about, you know, those moments of struggle in our own lives and not being ashamed by them, right? But by kind of connecting with people for them. I remember that being such a visceral moment. And I guess one of the reasons I wanted to start there today, just to kind of have to think about those moments, is because I think that the joy and the struggle, right, of that fight to get us to where we are is oftentimes kind of goes by the wayside. And it seems like one of these things that is really important to honor, right? To honor that work and honor that history, and also to kind of always kind of, you know, keep in conversation with those people that kind of, you know, are still out there organizing, right? So it's amazing. And so, okay, so one of the reasons I wanted to have you both on tonight is, you know, you were both kind of two signatories, I should say, to the Pennsylvania's People's Budget. And what struck me this year is there was 28 kind of lawmakers who signed on to this, right? And like the People's Budget itself, right, is not a brand new thing, right? But for this year, the fact that you had so many people sign on and some people that want to actually get behind it, the fact that right now, right, the you know, that you're having like independent kind of budget hearings, right, as part of kind of representing the needs of kind of working people, seems so absolutely critical. So if we kind of focus a little bit on saying what's happening right now kind of in the budget, I mean, we're in the midst of these three kind of, at least three kind of interlock, well, more than that, there's multiple overlapping crises right now. Obviously COVID is a dominant one, but also a jobs crisis. We're talking about a climate crisis. We're talking about a housing crisis. We're talking about a kind of racial justice crisis, which is not something that is, you know, brand new or caused recently, but is kind of all part of the mix right now. And it seems both something that is fraught, but it's also, you know, coming to the head in terms of like, you know, the budget as a kind of, say, a moral document, a document about kind of justice and where we put our kind of aspirations and our hope as a people. And so I wonder if you can talk a little bit about kind of what, you know, that launch of the People's Budget seems to be a kind of a beginning rather than an end, number one. And what seems to be your focus right now in terms of like some of the budget priorities kind of moving forward to make sure that we're kind of addressing these crises kind of at like at the state level? I don't know if Representative Fiedler, I know that you just kind of the budget hearings in the House had just kind of come to a conclusion, if that's right, from last week. So maybe yes. you can talk a little bit about what that process was like and what you see as some of the kind of the key areas that are going to be important to pay attention to and, you know, people need to be organizing around too as well.
Absolutely. And we did just finish 3 weeks of budget hearings last week in Harrisburg on the House side. So biggest things for me, I think that I would call people's attention to, one is education funding. So in the governor's proposal, he actually has quite a bold education funding plan. And that includes both funding to get the lead and asbestos and other toxins out of our school buildings, which I think is absolutely essential. And I know Senator Sabal does as well. And then the governor's proposal also includes a bold funding plan to increase education funding and also to distribute it more fairly. So I don't know how many people who are listening are familiar with the out-of-date, very unequitable, unfair way in which we distribute our education funding, but it is all of those things. And it really hurts places like Philadelphia, places that have seen population increase, or at least not a loss of population over the last couple of decades, and disproportionately harms Black and brown kids. So the governor's proposal, and you know, I don't support things just because it is his proposal. Sure. I think I made that clear in my short time in Harrisburg, but that's something that was talked a lot about during our both our official House budget hearings, and then also we just had one hearing about education funding. I believe there's another one that's going to be held at some point in collaboration with the Senate. So education funding is up there at the top for me. We have an opportunity to create the kinds of palaces of learning that our kids deserve, right? So getting mm-hmm. the lead and asbestos out, but putting all the good stuff in. So yeah. Putting in, you know, nurses, bilingual guidance counselors, librarians, teachers' aides, like all of these positions, right, that we really want to see. And I think so often many of us get stuck in this position of fighting just to make a little progress forward because mm-hmm. we are in such a bad place when it comes to, for example, the condition of our school buildings. But we do really want to push for the kind of schools that we deserve and that our kids deserve, right? So I would say education. And then the other piece for me is taxation. So the governor has a proposal that is a step toward a progressive taxation system, which is something we absolutely need in Pennsylvania. Yeah. Our tax law is totally messed up, upside down, poor people, working people, middle class people, all pay, you know, more taxes than we should. If we had a fair tax system. And he, you know, while his proposal is controversial in some ways, you know, not everybody's behind it, I do think that it opens up an important conversation about how messed up our tax system is in mm-hmm. Pennsylvania. And that's a conversation that I want to keep having in our hearings, in the people's budget hearings. And with that, I'll let Senator Sabal jump in. I know he's got a lot to say as well.
Excellent. Yeah. And so, and then on the flip side, on the Senate side, like those budget hearings begin today, right? And you were there, Senator Sabal, earlier today. And so what, like, how's that experience there and kind of looking forward, what do you see as some of the priorities that we definitely need to be pushing on?
So this is my first, you know, it was my first day, my first round of budget hearings as a legislator. And it's pretty fascinating, I have to say. I mean, it's just like there's the one aspect of it that's interesting and hard to, or an interesting challenge to kind of manage is the fact that you're speaking to multiple different audiences mm-hmm. at one, you know, there's the kind of nominal sense that you are speaking to get a, you know, to listen to a budget request for a department, but then you're also speaking to your fellow legislators. You're trying to push for a particular set of priorities. You're also, you know, people are watching who are interested in these departments who depend on them. We had the Independent Fiscal Office today and the Department of Revenue. And so naturally, a lot of conversations turn precisely to the tax proposals that the governor had laid on the table, in particular the personal income tax increase, as well as the some changes to accounting and reporting to make it, a lot of multi-state corporations don't pay taxes in the state for the work that they do. And so you got to, and partly it's the way that their income is reported.
The good old Delaware loopholes in there too, right?
The Delaware loophole. And so, so that was a big focus and kind of back and forth. There was a little bit of discussion around severance tax on natural gas, on fracking. That's been a long time point of discussion. But I think that those are going to continue to take place. There was a very interesting point brought up by, or actually most forcefully emphasized by my Republican colleague, Senator Pat Brown, which was just the fact that the state is aging in particular. And that's just something, and I think we have different viewpoints on what that means. I mean, I personally feel like that brings me, you know, to sort of what we should be fighting for. One is just, we've had a nightmarish scenario under COVID vis-a-vis our elderly population, as well as the caregivers who do that work. So on the one hand, our nursing homes were devastated by COVID and continue to be. But also just the people who do that work often are deeply underpaid. If you're a home health care aide, you're barely able to, you don't really have a secure right to collective bargaining and to organize.
Right.
And so those are longstanding issues, especially as insofar as that is the largest sector of the workforce, and it is the one sector of the workforce that's growing. We talk a lot about fracking. We talk a lot about those sorts of jobs. What about the people who do care work? So that's one thing that I think we should continue to hit on. The other things are, you know, I absolutely support the education funding priorities as well as the overall condition of our schools and our facilities and wanting to change that. And to have a real conversation about progressive tax policy in our state, which is one of the worst in terms of its neighbors, in terms of that sort of policy, but also just what is left out routinely of these budgets. So on the one hand, just flatlined environmental funding, the fact that our Department of Environmental Protection is able to do very little protecting, it is not able to really respond to the devastation wrought by fracking across our Commonwealth in families everywhere who are getting sick, who may be indeed getting cancer from rare forms of cancer due to fracking contamination. At the same time that we really do not fund housing in our budget. We don't fund, and this speaks to our interlocking crises, our affordable housing crisis, our environmental crisis, and our racial justice, our crisis of you know, racial inequity. These, I mean, we don't have dedicated funding that we should have for affordable housing in our Commonwealth. And so in a way, I also want to highlight what we don't do, what we fail to respond to year after year in these budgets. And can we, and it's not adequate to say that we don't have the money. We do, we just spend, and I, we just, we choose to prioritize subsidizing natural gas, things like that, as of over the things that we really ought to be funding and caring for. And so I think that's what I hope we can all sort of fight for, but this budget season.
Absolutely. And, you know, let's go to the education funding a little bit too. And you, Representative Fiedler, on this, because obviously Philadelphia has been pretty much ground zero when it comes to a whole series of kind of assaults on public education and kind of the defunding of kind of city schools in particular, as well as charter experiments, as well as kind of like, you know, disenfranchising kind of parents and citizens of the city, be able to make decisions over their own schools, which obviously directly impacts kind of these budgetary questions. And it seems to me is that there's been, you know, every budget season, you know, I've you know, stood with folks on the stairs of the Capitol, right, with organizations that have attempted to kind of push for more funding. And it seems like now is it's almost like a make or break time, especially in the midst of the coronavirus. And so I'm just curious how you see the what the push on for the education funding is. Does it look like we're going to get this? And what role does some of these, you know, these kind of independent, say, people's budget hearings play in, say, maybe, I don't know, if you see them as adding to the discussion or you see as pressuring the discussion? What's the kind of like the hope here? Because, you know, I do think there are some people who are saying, yes, I would love to have that, but they're a little bit, you know, they feel, okay, we've been down this road before, but they're not going to give it to us. Although, you know, Wolf has been not as bad, right, on some of these things. So I'm curious, like, how you see it there on the funding. Are we going to see that kind of funding moving forward? Are we going to need to pressure more? What's going on?
Sure. So I hope that no one who is in the plans for these budget hearings is upset with me for saying this. I don't think they will be, but we kind of made an agreement, I think, that we were just going to give it a shot. We were just going to try to do this, right? And I mentioned that because I think it's hard. All of us are very detail-oriented, right? We're really committed to this. We, in many ways, know our stuff, right? We read a lot of stuff. We want to get this right. We want it to happen. We want everything we do, we want it to be successful, right? Like a very much a human nature sort of thing. And I think that we decided we were just going to try it. We were just going to do our best. We're going to pull these hearings together. We're going to have real people talk about the impact of state funding or lack of funding on their lives. And we were going to talk about the things that felt really important. And I feel really, like, really proud of us and our team and all the people who participated. You know, we had a testifier from Make the Road, a testifier from Power. Like, we had these amazing speakers from across the state talk and really in a very comprehensive way about the statewide impact. And so will this be successful? I think it's already successful from a narrative perspective and getting people's attention, right? Mm-hmm. And that's good because we're talking about the things that impact the majority of people across Pennsylvania. So that for me feels important to, I guess, just say out loud because we all want it to be, you know, we want to see this happen.
Yes.
It very much is going to come down to you know, we've got some particular math in Harrisburg and priorities. Obviously, we're expecting a significant chunk of funds to come through from the feds. And I think that if that does actually happen in the way that we expect, that could allow some movement in some other areas that hopefully will facilitate things like, you know, if not the actual proposal the governor laid out, something more similar, right? Mm-hmm. A serious investment in education, as Senator Saval said, a serious investment in housing. It is frustrating to see our DEP and DCNR like so underfunded, even though they stay flat, right? We heard in our budget hearings the secretary say we don't have enough people to regulate oil and gas and ensure clean water. Like, that's a problem, right? That is a problem. That is a red flag. That is air and water that we're talking about. So,
yeah,
you know
what it is?
It's really a potential, hard on that.
Yeah, and it's a potential jobs program if you look at it the right way, right?
I mean, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And I know that talking about employment is something that we've pushed pretty hard in these hearings to be right up front and center, right? Because that's that's an immediate need for people, right? Just speaking like totally straightforward, totally. That is totally. People need to be able to feed their families now. And we need to show that we've got a plan that would allow that to happen. So, yeah, I think it's been really effective in some of those ways. And in other ways, we'll do what we can this year, and we're going to be back next year too. We're going to keep fighting for these same things.
I mean, I can't tell you how thrilled I was, to see these hearings. I mean, you know, as someone who's not, you know, I'm not an elective representative, but I've been, you know, I work at Kutztown University. I've been in the leadership of my faculty union since I've been there back in 2002, right up to like, you know, recently, until I had to kind of like pay more attention to my kids, you know, it's like that. But you know, it's wanting to see a Democratic Party in the state that didn't see being in the minority as, you know, the opportunity just to, you know, throw up your hands and, well, there's nothing really you can do if we don't have any power. And we said, well, wait a minute, you've got platforms, right? You can create platforms if you organize it. And so to see you all putting these things together, I mean, so I know you've done like kind of one on climate and environment, right? And then one on mm-hmm. education, mm-hmm. right? Are there other ones planned going forward?
There are. Senator Saval, do you want to talk about them?
Fantastic.
There's an infrastructure one, which and so like that which, you know, specifically, I think, at least in part, speaks to some sort of Green New Deal like commitments that I think are shared across a broad set of progressive legislators. And, you know, just to I think the idea, you know, so we can talk about facilities with schools, talk about public transit in particular, which is you know, it faces a real challenge, a real fiscal cliff, honestly, in the next year or so. And I think I believe it was really Rep. Fiedler's idea, this set of people's budget hearings, insofar as I know that when we were coming in, I think, or when I came in, I think we had these conversations where Rep. Fiedler was like, I really should, you know, I really want to think about a people's budget. What would a people's budget look like? And I think the place that we've all taken it, and from that cue, is that, you know, as you were sort of mentioning, as someone who is only recently a legislator, but who was nonetheless a fairly engaged and active person, I still only had the vaguest idea of what the budget process was in Harrisburg and what it entailed. Certainly, I knew a decent amount about the education funding process, but even then, it was just the adjudication, how it worked, what it affected. I mean, all of that was something we wanted to essentially make public, involve social movements in the creation of it, and just essentially have a public-facing budget process. Mm-hmm. And so in the environmental hearings that we had, the main emphasis, I would say, that came out of it was just the sheer human cost of our natural gas industry. And the neglect of the people who have suffered under it, and it's just, I mean, we certainly talked about a green stimulus investments that would dramatically change that picture, but overwhelmingly, just it was devastating. I think even for those of us, you know, like Rep. Fiedler and myself, who I think know these stories, have heard them. You know, we heard from a constituent who lives near the refinery in Philadelphia, the PES oil refinery that exploded a couple yep. years ago. Mm-hmm. And again, it was all sort of familiar, but just like a gut punch. And I thought that was an essential part of this, that like these, when you approach the budget, this was certainly my experience today, you see it through this screen of programs, of to some degree of acronyms and these numbers have, the effects are just human. They have effects on everyday lives of our people in our Commonwealth. And I know that that's almost like a bit of a cliche, but just to experience that, just person by with testifiers, just to say, here is how this budget affects me. And moreover, here's how my interactions with the government in Harrisburg go. I think that's the other thing that came out of these hearings is just the demoralization that sets in when you have to deal with deregulated, defunded, you know, liberalized bureaucracies. which are just are designed to be unfeeling. In that, and so, and to kind of short circuit your desire for just accountability. And I think that that's been coming out of these hearings, as well as, you know, so on the one hand, that clarity, on the other hand, I think just the vision for an alternative and for something different. And so I think it's very exciting so far.
Yeah, well, you know, and I see that especially, well, I mean, again, not, I shouldn't say especially, but on the kind of the environmental hearings, for example, I mean, last week on the show, we had Sean O'Leary from the Ohio River Valley Institute on about their new report about the devastation that fracking has brought. You know, here's all the promises that were put up by the American Petroleum Institute. This is going to be the huge impact. And it turns out in those areas, the 28 counties or 22 counties that they focus on in Ohio, Pennsylvania, and West Virginia, they've actually, you know, while the contribution to the national GDP is like off the charts, right, for what the natural gas companies have made, like hand over fist profits, what's actually happened in those communities has been underdevelopment, right? Mm-hmm. Has been the jobs have been lost, not gained. Right. People have moved away. Right. Economic impact. They've grown slow, like more slowly than the rest of the nation, if not gone backwards. And, you know, and I think that, you know, and this always hits home to me is like my wife has family up in kind of the Ricketts Glen area up near Benton, PA. And, you know, we've seen the impact on all of them. I mean, one of her uncles and aunt and uncle's neighbors was, you know, like everybody does up there. You're looking for work. Right. And got roped into working for the oil and gas industry. And then, you know, that job goes away because the price of gas goes down. And so what does he do? He starts traveling around with the oil and gas companies, right, trying to find work in Virginia and in North Carolina, only to move to North Carolina and find out his job goes away and he's out of money and he's got to find a way to make do in order to get back home. And while he's down there, his house burnt down, right?
Oh my God.
You know, wow. I mean, it's like, and you know, again, and how did his house burn down? Well, his house burned down because also it's all that whole region is overlaid by an opioid epidemic, right? And yet people have broken their home and, you know, it's all this kind of stuff going on. I mean, to see some of those personal stories and then overlaying that with these statistics and the reports that come out. And on top of that, seeing, you know, what is it? The, I want to say the Sierra Club came out with that, the report. Yeah, exactly. About the banning of the fracking of the Delaware River Basin stuff. We see all these things kind of happening at once. And I think the very fact that you're holding these hearings, right? Suddenly when these reports and these, you know, kind of events happen, they've got a place to go now, right? And where we can actually put pressure upon what's happening in our state government. So for me, from my perspective, it's like it's been outstanding. And to know that we have an opportunity to push that even further, this is just the beginning, is even more kind of encouraging, I guess.
Absolutely. So to push it further and to expect more, right? I think that senators have all got to this, certainly in the beginning, was this this idea that Harrisburg is actually the place that we want to be. We want to be there. We want to be there demanding more and expecting more, not just of individual elected officials. Yes, absolutely. But of our state government as a whole.
Right.
So, yeah, I think that that's incredibly important. And that Ohio River Valley report to me was just so often people are promised jobs, right? And they are desperate and they need to be able to pay their bills like now. And
yeah.
That report for me really just, it pulled off like the sheen or whatever the metaphor is,
yeah.
Right? And exposed it for what it is. Just frustrating and heartbreaking.
Yeah, exactly. And I'm glad you used the word heartbreaking on that too, because I was going to say it was gut-wrenching to me reading that.
Mm-hmm.
Like it felt painful reading that report, because, you know, seeing firsthand, you know, again, people up in that area that I know, and seeing the kind of like, I mean, like again, people selling off their land, you know, and they know it's not going to be good for them in the long run. But what are your options? Right. And that's kind of where we leave people in desperation. We end up kind of going down these roads, which is just is amazing. So, I mean, yes, absolutely. So we've got stuff going on in the environment. Where else do we go from here?
Where else do we go from here? Well, we definitely don't sit quietly in the back and wait our turn, which was advice that was given to me when I started, to sit there for a couple years and just be quiet.
Gotta love that, right?
Yeah, that didn't work.
They're just looking out for your well-being. That's
I
all.
I guess so, right? Well, let's see. Where do we go from here? So are you talking about legislation?
Well, I was thinking in particular about the budget hearings and I'd like, you know, mm-hmm. we could get him to talk about so because I think, you know, what we're going to close this out in a little bit, kind of like kind of on the other side of it is almost got to see if there's anybody who wants to call in and stuff. But really thinking about specifically around, say, the budget and say any of these budget hearings, like, are there key points of pressure right now? Are there key points where people should be paying attention, where actually some attention on some of these budget processes, these hearings could be of importance and have an impact right now?
I would say two things. Mm-hmm. One is schools, like specifically toxic schools, remediation of toxic schools feels to me like something that is doable. It feels doable, whether it's through the RACP program, the expansion of the capital mm-hmm. program, or through the federal funds. It feels doable. It benefits all Pennsylvanians. It's job creation. It's like investment in our state infrastructure, jobs right in the community. Like, it feels to me like a solid thing that should be possible. And if we push on it, it might be possible. Mm-hmm. And the other thing is minimum wage increase, right? We need to do that.
We need to go all the way up to $9.50.
I mean, we need to be at $15 an hour already. But pushing on that relentlessly feels to me exhausting, but like what we've got to do apparently to get enough folks on the other side of the aisle willing to make sure that we pay people a wage that doesn't keep them in poverty.
Excellent. And yeah, go ahead. Sorry.
Oh, sorry. Go. Oh, no, I was just going to echo. I mean, I agree. I think that Rhett Fiedler is exactly right that, and has been, you know, a real leader on this issue that the toxic schools crisis, you know, one, it just insofar as there's more attention paid to schools, I think, in general, in part because students have only been intermittently been in facilities. I mean, in Philadelphia, more or less not at all until this month, more I think in upcoming select schools, and the sense of just the sense of what educators do and the importance of that work, the sense that we, you know, that these facilities, even after a year, are, you know, are not fully up to snuff, and the possibility that we could change the budgetary process to make it possible for state funds to go to, you know, grant capital funds to go to schools, as Rhett Fiedler has pushed. And in addition, federal funding, I think, would change the picture. And again, because, you know, the stimulus package, I just, you know, is an enormous achievement. And I think it should be an enormous achievement
yes.
of the left, you know,
yes,
in particular.
Totally. Like, 100%. Yep.
It's just, it would not have been the thing it was if it were not for, you know, 10 to 12 years of, you know, post the American Recovery Act of just organizing and pushing for something different. And one, you know, that really emphasizes things like childcare and and aspects of our society that have been criminally underfunded or underserved for years. But there is school funding in it, you know, and yes. there will be more in the next round of stimulus funding. So I think that's a big one. And then the little plug I want to make is just for the notion that we should be really thinking about, you know, we're going to be getting, it may be this round of budget funds, and it may be in the future. Just we have to be thinking about a vision for housing in our Commonwealth, and
yes.
think about ways that we have some funding. We have the FAIR, you know, trust fund. There's the PHFA. There are various ways that affordable housing is funded, but we have a vision, you know, and that Rhett Fiedler, I know, is supportive of, and also shares, just of green housing, of making a commitment to workforce development that will retrofit our homes, certainly retrofit our schools, just like change the picture for housing for so many people, make home repairs easier. Just across, like, I feel like this is an essential vision that's at the heart of the Green New Deal, and it should be in our Commonwealth. And I think it's something that would dramatically impact people's lives. So can we devote some portion of our state budget to that vision for housing? What would that look like? That's sort of, I think, something that we should all just take some time to think through.
Absolutely. And, you know, I was going to make sure that we got a chance to hear your thoughts on that, too, because I know that was one of the things when, you know, after Governor Wolf put out his budget, you released a letter kind of shortly after that, was that that was one of the things that, you know, I have to say, I mean, it was a very well-crafted letter, right, to kind of like walking the line between, okay, look, there's a lot of really good stuff here that's really important, but I want to kind of say we need to pay attention to these other things. And housing was one of those issues that was front and center for you.
Yeah, I just, you know, and it is for me, it's certainly for Rhett Fiedler, and I've learned a lot from her about this, that like it is, on the one hand, it's actually something that is a little less polarized than maybe certain other things in Pennsylvania, insofar as the industry is not as entrenched. I mean, there are obviously landlord associations, developers, the like, but it's not anywhere near the same power as the oil and gas industry. And so I sometimes actually feel there's occasionally more room for maneuver, at the same time that it is a project. It touches you. I mean, you know, schools are the same thing. I think they are actually broadly, public education is broadly popular across the Commonwealth. I think housing, it touches everyone. It's touched us much more during this crisis. I mean, during the pandemic, the sense of the housing crisis. And so can we change the picture? Can we address the fact that we have a very old housing stock in Pennsylvania, that for homeowners, they have struggled staying in their homes just because they can't afford repairs, that for in the near to medium term, they will face crises of weatherization as we face more extreme weather events, that people across the Commonwealth are facing utility shutoffs, overwhelmingly working class families in Philadelphia and, you know, other parts of the state, overwhelmingly families of color, that, you know, all of that is what we talk about when we talk about housing. And so right. we need to be investing in our housing recovery. We need to be ensuring that people are able to stay at home. And then going forward, that what home means is something different. And I think this is what we, you know, what is, you know, Elizabeth used, Representative Fiedler used the term palaces of learning for our schools. We should think about, you know, that's exactly a very apt term. We should be thinking about luxurious amounts of funding for nothing is too good for our citizens. Like we need to be making housing a human right and something that is stable for people. And so both, you know, I think both just a short term keeping people in their homes and long term developing a program whereby those homes are retrofitted, weatherized, repaired, and the amount of affordable housing stock in our Commonwealth is expanded. That seems like an essential part of it.
Yeah, and I don't know what both of you's take is on this, but it also seems to me that in part one of the effects of the pandemic has been, you know, be careful. I'm not saying this is kind of like an opportunistic sense, right? But I'm saying like, is that people have been hurting in such a direct way. And there's been a space that's kind of broken the routine, right? Because we've been forced into this, you know, god awful world that we're in now. But it's, and, you know, people seem to be more receptive, right? In part because the need is so high, but receptive to kind of saying, you know what? We do need to do something big here. I mean, I don't know if that's your sense of things on like on the ground in Harrisburg too.
I think I would say the sense is definitely a rejection of austerity. Mm-hmm. And we heard this even from some of our maybe more moderate colleagues in the House early on, was we do not want an austerity budget. We don't want it. Our constituents don't want it. And so I feel like that is really resounding. That is deep within the Democratic caucus. And I think that the budget that we see from Wolf in many ways, you know, there's places that we want to see it different, but it is not that, right? It is not that. And so, yeah, I think now is the time to push for what we really want, right? We don't have to fight against austerity from, you know, from the governor's pen, at least right now. What we've got to push for is what we really want. And I think that there's a chance to do it. And quite honestly, the federal funding opens that door in a way that it might have been closed otherwise.
Yeah, I saw some numbers on that. Just looking at compared, say, for example, with the with the relief package that came out during the Obama administration after the kind of collapse, and like the proportions of like the money that was going to corporations versus people is almost like flipped and reversed this time around, going into, say, plugging kind of like state and local government thing, and actually money going to actual people and their kids and services that are going to reach them has been pretty astounding. I'm going to be curious. You know, this is totally, I'll say totally self-interested on this one, but I know that the higher education hearings are coming up, and I know we've got a chance on our state system that is wreaking havoc on my university and my university system. So he seems to be bringing forward a little austerity with his Silicon Valley smile. I like to call him Chancellor McDreamy, but you know, I'm not asking you to. So we shall see. We shall see if he's still going to work to bring the pain. We shall see. I want to take those. Everybody who's tuning in, thank you for joining. If you you want to call in, you got a question, you got a comment, you'd like to hear some kind of response, we're here with Representative Elizabeth Fiedler and Senator Nikhil Saval, State Senator Nikhil Saval. We'd like welcome your comments. If you're listening to us and watching us and follow us on YouTube, please feel free to chime in. Anything that you would kind of like to respond to, or kind of to add your comments or tell your story, that'd be fantastic. I want to remind you that you can help support the show becoming a patron for as little as $5 a month. Go to Patreon.com/RC Press. You can show us some love also right between this live show by hitting that little gift icon at the bottom of your Podbean app. All the gifts that you send us will go to help support this show. And make sure you head on over to our YouTube page. That's Raging Chicken Press's YouTube page. Hit that subscribe button, like the stream, and hit that bell so you know every time that we go live. Let me ask you, and again, if anybody calls in, we'll put them up right away. But I'm curious about this, right? So we've got this the budget process going on. I like the fact that we have something that's tangible and doable that looks like education funding. We might be able to do this, and we could put pressure upon this. Absolutely. Yes. I'm sorry, Ric Flair. Yeah, we're in PA, right? So I'm in kind of southeast Pennsylvania. We got folks in Harrisburg and Philadelphia here. Yes, we are. Anyway, so kind of thinking about calling your rep, saying we want this education funding, making sure that you're kind of find what's going on there. If there's calls for responses, make sure that you're sending support. Send words of support. Send, you don't care if your representative is a Republican or a Democrat. Like, those calls going into representatives' offices, those calls going to state senators' offices are going to kind of be heard, right? So keep on doing this. I know my representative, for example, is Brian Fitzpatrick, right, who I'm not very happy with as a human being right now, not as a human being, but as my rep. But that's just who I am. But I'm going to be calling his office, right? And say, okay, look, education is something that we got to make sure that we're going to fully fund the kind of proposal for education that are on the table. We want to make sure that I love the palaces of learning. Love it. This is, I'll use that language when I'm calling my representative. And if you're listening to this and you're in Pennsylvania, you should too, because we all support we could do from the outside can only support it going in. And that's kind of what I am kind of want to kind of get your thoughts on this a little bit. Is like, one of the I'll just lay my cards on the table. It's like, for me, is that what's different right now in Pennsylvania, and why I have personally so much hope about what's going on in Pennsylvania, is not only are we seeing folks like you who are being elected and going to the state house, but we're seeing unprecedented, at least since my time in Pennsylvania. Like, I moved to Pennsylvania in 2002. I have never seen this kind of organization on the ground. Right. So we have like organizations like PA Stands Up. We have organizations like Make the Road. We have organizations like Reclaim Philadelphia. We have like this Philadelphia Student Union. Those folks I talked to a couple years ago were just absolutely kind of amazing and off the hook. We have Democratic Socialists of America who have been doing kind of on the ground organizing. And to see this kind of organizing happening at the local and the state and regional level is astounding. And so, I'm thinking about, you're all kind of thought on that kind of organizing that's happening in communities right now, and the role that those organizations and the people kind of, calling the representatives' offices or kind of pushing, protesting around particular policies, advocating for what we're doing on Doing Citizen, whatever it might be. But the role that those movements have played, in kind of both where you are now, but can play going forward. I know Representative Fiedler, you want to start with that one?
Sure. There's a lot in there.
Yeah, I know. That's why my students get really angry at me, but whatever.
I think one of the strengths of coming into office in this way is already having some of those connections, not mm-hmm. all of them, but some of them,
sure.
and drawing on them from elected office, but also really coming in from a humble place, from knowing that, you know, I don't have all the answers. I don't. And in fact, it is better when I work in a coalition with other groups who, you know, have people on the ground, and we can strategize, and we can figure out what's the best way to approach this, and how do we, you know, respect all these different pieces of it. I think it involves a particular way of operating that runs counter to the natural way that a lot of people do politics in the building where we work in Harrisburg. So I think you're only going to see more and more of this. I think that there will be, I'm going to predict it here. I think here that there go. Will be a real push on the minimum wage if we don't see actual action this time. I think that there will be a strong, cohesive effort to mm-hmm. make something happening, because people are just fed up. They have had enough, right? And whether they live in, you know, in the Southeast or the Northwest or in the middle of the state, they are tired. They are tired of being paid, you know, a poverty wage. They are tired of choosing between a job that they love that doesn't pay them nearly enough to survive, and they rely on public benefits, or they could go, you know, do this other. It does not make sense. It does not make sense to have an economy that functions this way, that treats people this way. And I think, yeah, people have had enough. Maybe that'll be the slogan of the campaign. If they choose it, they may, because I think it's past time, right? It's embarrassing. 725 is embarrassing and insulting. So, and I think that's going to involve not just pressure from the inside, but it's going to have to involve pressure from the outside to be effective.
Senator Saval, what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I agree with all of that. I think what working with social movements, I think, does in office is it gives you, I mean, one, humility is exactly right, which is that by the same token, it gives you license and it gives you freedom. I think this is, you know, people often think about movements or coalitions as holding elected officials accountable. But in fact, the best thing that they do is they have your back, essentially, that they send you into office to represent movements, to represent organized constituencies.
Right.
And so you have to act, you have to take risks, you have to take risky votes, you have to act boldly, you have to do, organizing yourself. And the movements are there for that. They're there for that kind of freedom and freedom of action and legislating and activity. And I think that, and I think that's what's exciting about it, is like there's just a lot more, there's pushing you to do more, because that's what you're here for. None of us, I certainly didn't plan on running for office. And for 2 years ago, it was the social movements that made it possible. And so that, I think, is hugely important. And then I think it's what it also does is it fills, you know, we have to just realize how, if you think about the party infrastructure, the Democratic Party mm-hmm. infrastructure in Pennsylvania over the last several decades, it's really cratered and declined. And there are just so many areas where it is just not doing the work that it's supposed to do. And in a way, social movement work and organizing across the state has come in to the gap, and with a much harder edge, of course, and just like a further, like a much stronger sense of ideology and the fact that there are progressives, the left is everywhere. I mean, and the kind of like sense of what is popular in the state is changing.
Right.
The sense that clean energy is popular. That is just the fact. Single payer healthcare is popular. Housing as a human right is popular. All of these things are popular, and they're just, people are acting, and you see that everywhere. And so Pence, you know, there certainly PA stands up, Reclaim in our own city. Pennsylvania United, Make the Road, which is doing so much, as Rep Fiedler mentioned, doing so much organizing among immigrants and children of immigrants. And I think this is just like the ferment is enormous. And And it's, and you know, and I hope for more sort of movement leaders who come in, you know, with that kind of freedom that I think that social movements are designed to give you license. And well, I think that's what comes of it.
Yeah, I think it's really, you know, one of the things that's really remarkable, just in terms of, you know, I see this as it's a really remarkable change. You think historical context. I remember just a few years ago, I want to say it was probably around 2016, maybe 2017. Say a friend of mine, we're out in Harrisburg, and a friend of mine took us to these, say, political offices. I'm going to leave it as broad as possible because I don't want to out anybody here. And it was kind of after hours, right? We had been, I think it was actually during the PA Progressive Summit or something like this, one of these years. And then took us to these political offices and went down these corridors into this kind of political strategies, like kind of, you know, kind of progressive left to democratic kind of strategy stuff. And there's a big map on the wall. And it had every legislative district in the state of Pennsylvania and the Commonwealth, I should say. And there were a whole bunch of them that were, I forget the color of what it was. It was like, say, yellow or green or something like this. And he says, you know what that green is? I'm like, no. And he's like, that's every district the Democrats have not contested. And it was the bulk of the map. And some of the places where it just had been completely written off, right? Not even, and, you know, and I understand, look, there's a practical component of it. You only have some limited resources and things like this. But I'm talking about, we're huge swaths of there. And that's no longer the case, right? Now, again, I don't want to paint too broad of a brush here, but, you know, we've had, like, on the show, we've had, like, you know, Shayna Danielson, we have Tara Shakespeare on the show, we had Tara Zirinsky up in the Lehigh Valley, Rick Kujewski, of course. And, you know, one of the things, if even you look at the organizing that took place around the, like, leading up to the election, the political involvement of candidates that were running this time, yes, like, they didn't sweep all those seats, like, right around Harrisburg, right? But the movements that they're building there, right, are doing kind of what you were just referring to, Senator Saval, is kind of like changing the way we're thinking about politics and kind of what is popular and what we want. And, you know, that for me is some of the most heartening thing I could say right now about Pennsylvania politics. It seems very much like Pennsylvania is really making a turn, and, you know, not just in the state, but it's really, I think, we're at the cusp of being able to take a lead on some of these things, given the movements that are going on. Because everyone I've talked to that was, lost one of those elections, this past election, but kind of gained on the previous loss, right, and kind of contributed to Joe Biden's win, they're not like, oh, well, okay, I guess I lost, I'm going away. Nope. Their next question is like, okay, what's my next organizing, right? So that, for me, is incredibly encouraging. So, for what it's
absolutely worth. Yeah. And I, you know, just to choose a couple of the people that you talked about, I mean, Shayna Danielson, who is hugely ran a hugely inspirational campaign. I mean, it was inspirational to, I think, and Tara Shakespeare and Nicole Miller, who were all running in and around Cumberland County. I mean, that county did, you know, it improved 4 points, I think, from 2016 to 2020 for the national ticket for Biden. Shayna came within like a percentage point of Biden and Shapiro, you know, the top performers in that district, and outperformed Joe Torsella and Nina Ahmad. And like, she was running an unabashedly progressive left, you know, left campaign, and it resonated, you know, and it didn't happen this time, but it's like, it's obviously a sign of things to come. And I thought that was like, that was a real bright light.
Absolutely. And as you just said that, I just realized that when I had her on the show, I used your tweet with those stats. Right? Oh, okay. Discussion.
I cite it all the time to everyone. Yeah, it's there, right? It's just like it's happening. It's like, and it's uneven, and it's an uneven process across the state, and it's going to take time. And you're reversing a lot of stuff that has gone wrong over the years, a lot of disinvestment, a lot of, you know, frankly, a lot of cowardice on the part of the Democratic Party. And so it's not, and I think and that is one thing that none of those candidates had. You know, it's just there's a lot of bravery to go around. Mm-hmm. And I think that's going to change the calculus.
Absolutely. Well, I'm very conscious of your all's time here too, as well, and I don't want to keep you too long. I know that like you've got nothing to do, and if you know if anybody's out there does want to kind of have a call in, anybody going to get in last comment before kind of we begin to wrap things up, please do. Just to kind of say to close out a little bit, Representative Fiedler, you have any kind of say closing thoughts or things that you would like to leave people with as they're kind of. I guess looking first steps, right, about this budget process that we're engaged in right now, or kind of a little bit more of a kind of, you know, longer term, kind of looking ahead, say, beyond the budget process too as well. Like, anything you'd like to leave folks with?
I feel like a lot of what we're talking about, both the people's budget and kind of big picture, what we're building for me is coming out of reimagining what's possible and thinking about that. What do we really want? What do we really want? And fighting for it, demanding it, working for it, right? Working our butts off. And a lot is possible if we do that. And we're going to grow, right? We're going to, as we were just saying, we are not getting smaller and we are not going away. We are not, you know, obviously the senator did not come in and sit quietly in the back of the room for a couple of years and like, I don't know, like absorb things before he started to speak, right? He came to do work. He came to do this work. So I think just, you know, we've talked a lot about a lot of issues, and I think for people who want to be engaged, like be engaged, be loud, call your representatives, find a way to get involved, whether it's with like PA Stands Up or Make the Road or whatever organization it is, and don't be deterred when inevitably someone's going to tell you to stop doing that, right? When they say be quiet or sit down or stop being such a something, like, if you feel deep down that that's the right thing to be doing and you're fighting alongside other people, then like keep pushing, because that's how we're going to make progress. That's how we're going to achieve the world that we want.
Excellent. Senator Saval, any closing thoughts?
Oh, I co-sign all of that. I would just organize. I mean, like people need to be part of organizations. I mean, you know, in a way, the people's budget process is meant to draw on that, to draw on the fact that we people organized together is the source of power, and we need that pressure on Harrisburg. Harrisburg can be a black box partly by design, and it's demoralizing for people to find out after the fact that the rental assistance dollars, you know, last year were diverted to the Department of Corrections or failed to, you know, reach people in need and things like that. And one way to stop that is to have organized pressure on every process that happens there. And I think that's so, you know, organized.
Absolutely. It's because as the old saying goes, right? First they ignore you, then they mock you, then they fight you, then you win. So I think that's kind of that's where we're going. And, you know, one of the things that I wanted to close out to, and, you know, again, thank you both for coming on tonight. And, you know, I'm looking back again at that, you know, that photo just that we just, you know, I just moved the paper and there it is on my desk once again, that I started off tonight's show with. And, you know, that's the kind of thing that, you know, anybody who's listening to this, anybody who's in this organization is like, you know, I know what burnout is and frustration is and how easy it is to get kind of, you know, feeling defeated. Right. But I look at that picture and see kind of there's so much joy. Right. And it's before the win. Right. It's kind of, we don't know if this is going to go where it goes. We're going to see, we're going to put the work in and we're going to fight it and we're going to do this. But it's incredible. That's the kind of joy that's in there. And I'm reminded of the fact that, and I'll, you know, kind of close out on this in some ways, but when, you know, we had my union, ABSCUF, right, we had never had a strike in our union's history. And when in 2016, when we came up to the point where it looks like, you know, we're going to have to organize, and there was a lot of people that were feeling defeated to say, yeah, you know, we've heard this before, nothing ever happens, and then we're going to get more taken away and stuff. We said, well, not if we actually organize and fight. And I was our strike chair at Kutztown and stuff, and we did that. We put in the organizing, and there were times when it felt like you know, this is just grunt work. We don't know if it's going to do anything. And when we had the strike, right, when we went on that strike and we had done the work with kind of connecting up with students and the community members and other unions, right, in the area, it was like unbelievable. It was such joy. And you had that moment of breakthrough of such possibility about if we start demanding kind of a better world, if we start demanding kind of what our hopes and dreams are, then we put the work in behind it, we could win. Right. And it'll be a great time doing it. So, hey, I can't thank you both enough. And for all the work that you're putting in, I just want you to know, too, as well, that it just means a lot to a lot of people to see things actually being done. And, you know, saying that, you know what, yes, you know, you're just not kind of politicians are going to go to like sit in the back, but kind of ready to do the work and kind of represent the people, and hope that we can be some wins behind the sales too as well. So thank you all for showing up tonight.
Thank you. It was fun.
Thank you. Thanks so much. This is great.
All right. Thanks so much. So, hey, everybody, want to thank everybody who turned out tonight. Remind you that this will all be available on our podcast and our YouTube channel, so that you could please share it out. You can hit that kind of like button for this stream right now on our YouTube channel. So make sure you subscribe. And if you want to help support this work, you make sure you become a patron for as little as $5 a month. Just go to patreon.com/RCPress and you can help support this show and help amplify the message of people working on the streets and people working in the halls of our state capitol. Thank you all, Representative Fiedler. Thank you, Senator Saval. Have a great one. See ya!
My face, my arms, can't tell if I exist. Am I the sky that